This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Well, now, that was a jobs report, wasn't it? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 6th of October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Jobs, yes, we will talk about the state of the American labor market. Also, though, the politics of this economy at this challenging moment. Catherine Rampell's at the Washington Post. Lynette Lopez is at Business Insider. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey.
So, Lynette, I will start with you, and the question comes after this observation. 336,000 new jobs, 3.8% on the rate, which everybody has heard by now. My question is this. Why? How does this keep happening?
Yeah, the U.S. economy is like, who's going to check me, boo? And it's nobody. We're still growing at a steady clip, envy of the world. We will have to watch and see what higher interest rates do, but the fears about hiking interest rates 5% in, you know, such a short amount of time, they have yet to break us the way that some people feared. And even today, the stock market, you know, it bumped after hearing this news, and now, you know, it ended the day in rally mode. So who knows?
So, Catherine, let me ask you this. Interest rates now will clearly stay higher for longer. The Fed will look at this, and it's better than even money, I think, that they raise rates at their next meeting. Do you think, after low these many months and years of the market not really believing the Fed was going to stay higher for longer, do you think the markets get it now?
Well, when I last looked at where the market placed the odds of a rate hike at their next meeting, it was still only about a third chance, I believe.
Yeah.
That was maybe an hour or so ago. Maybe it's changed since then. But in any event, it was after this jobs report came out. So markets seem to think that there's a slightly higher probability of a rate hike at the next meeting than they thought a few days ago, but they still think it's not going to happen for the most part. And I think actually this report was a little bit mixed on that question. Hmm. Yes, the headline number of jobs added was bonkers strong, as you've discussed. However, wage growth cooled.
Yep.
And it was at its slowest pace in quite a while. I forget in how long, but I think in over a year or about a year, somewhere around there. Yeah. In which case, maybe that suggests that, in fact, whatever inflationary pressures there might be coming out of the labor market are not so bad. I would also take the headline number with a little bit of a grain of salt, because I think that there could be some wacky seasonal adjustment going on to produce these numbers. Like, even if you look at the revisions that came from the last couple of months, those were largely about state and local government employment and education and things like that. So I don't know. I think I'm not trying to say the job market is not strong. It is very strong, but maybe not so strong that it's going to force a rate hike.
Interesting. Lynette, if I say soft landing now, what do you think? It seems to me we're back on the soft landing part of the discussion after a month or 6 weeks of everybody going, oh, no, now there's going to be a recession.
Well, I have always... I have a soft spot for the soft landing camp. Last year, I wrote a piece that was like, the U.S. economy may not be screwed, but the stock market certainly is. And it's definitely taking longer for that thesis to bear out, but we're starting to see that become a possibility, that it's just taking longer for the markets to realize that we're going to have a higher rate for longer regime than it is taking for the economy to digest it. Now, we don't know if that's true yet. Maybe the economy is slower than the market, but Wall Street has been in denial about this regime change, this higher for longer situation for a while now. And the rest of the economy seems to be humming along quite nicely. I don't know.
I don't know. That's kind of the motto these days of this economy. All right, Catherine, let me ask you this slight change of gears, and let's talk about the politics of this economy for a second. Obviously, what's going on in Washington, the Speaker of the House, and that whole thing. But let me ask you a bigger question, and this is based off a column you wrote this week about how Congress has basically forgotten how to do fiscal policy because it hasn't really had to worry about borrowing a ton of money because interest rates have been so low. I'm obviously paraphrasing here. But now interest rates aren't low anymore and debt really matters, and Congress still doesn't know how to do a huge part of its job.
They can't even do pretty routine things, you know, like pay off the bills that we already have when we have the money to pay them. I'm talking about, obviously, the debt limit showdown earlier this year, or we came very close to a government shutdown a few days ago, and we may be back in that situation in mid-November. That's like the relatively easy stuff. The challenge of dealing with long-term fiscal problems involves lots of unpopular choices, and that's going to be a much more difficult thing to tackle. So I'm super worried about all this. I mean, I know fiscal scolds have been warning for years our debt is unsustainable, and like someday it's going to cause a problem, and then that problem never seemed to manifest either in markets or in the economy writ large. But we've seen long-term interest rates lately get quite high. Their highest level in 16 years or so. I don't know that will be the case forever, but there's certainly an argument to be made that those rates will continue to be high for a while, especially if they're being driven by concerns about our sovereign debt rating, our political dysfunction, amongst other things. In that case, as you said, like, borrowing is no longer free.
Right.
We had this luxury of living in a world basically without trade-offs, where political parties, both of them, in fact, could increase spending and cut taxes. And now they're going to face some hard trade-offs because increasing deficits is no longer going to be costless, or could no longer effectively be costless. And I'm worried about that.
Lynette,
do they have the muscle memory for,
right,
for fixing
right,
the problem?
Right. Well, and you know, based on your column, you don't think the answer is yes to that one. But Lynette, let me ask you this. Do you have confidence that government can actually make decent fiscal policy now?
I don't have confidence, and these people don't have competence.
Ooh.
It's a problem. It's the fact that we don't have a speaker right now, the fact that there's always squabbling. It's a disaster. And I hope that our fiscal picture is not necessarily, and we don't get dragged into this, but the markets, Washington, they never expected the last 10 years, I think, to be our Goldilocks period, right? Like 0% interest rates was an emergency policy situation. But we got used to it, and we didn't realize like what kind of a golden period of rallying stocks, etc., that was. And it started to feel normal. Now we're coming to terms with the fact that that wasn't normal. You know, money isn't normal, and we have an entire generation of people who forgot how to manage, not just in Washington, but also on Wall Street too. So there will be consequences for that.
Lynette Lopez at Business Insider, Catherine Rampell at The Washington Post on a Friday. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
Have a nice weekend. Wall Street today. You know, honestly, traders took a while to decide how they felt about this morning's jobs report. Spoiler alert, they liked it. Details, numbers, when we get there. so here's something. Last Friday, crude oil, Brent North Sea, the global benchmark, was at $95.31 a barrel. This Friday, today, that same barrel could be had for $84 and change, a 10% drop in a week. It's playing out at the pump, too. Gas is off about 8 cents a gallon or so. Marketplace's Mitchell Harvin explains what's going on and why it matters.
Back in early September, Saudi Arabia and Russia announced they were cutting production to try and boost global oil prices. And I said this in a story right here on Marketplace.
Two of the world's biggest oil producers signaling tight supply is likely to keep crude prices high for a while.
Well, I was right for about 3 weeks. Then I wasn't anymore. After global crude prices peaked near $100 a barrel on September 27th, they started falling hard. Cutting supply isn't working to jack up prices anymore, says Bill Adams at Comerica Bank, because oil demand is dropping all over the world.
China's economy is having a really tough year that weighs on Chinese energy demand, and Europe's economy has sort of been on the cusp of recession since Russia invaded Ukraine and disrupted European energy supplies.
Plus, Adams says U.S. domestic producers have opened the taps.
One of the dynamics that I think has fueled oil prices moving lower is that production in the U.S. rose 5 or 6% over just a couple of weeks.
Meanwhile, oil demand is also down in the U.S., where people are driving less, pushing gas prices lower, says Andrew Gross at AAA.
It's fall. We see it every year. Gas prices are falling. It's what they do.
U.S. gas demand is actually at multi-decade lows, maybe because more people are working from home and driving electric vehicles. AAA reports the average price of gas has fallen in the last week to $3.74 a gallon nationwide. And Gross says he wouldn't be surprised if it fell to $3.30 by Christmas. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
If it wasn't clear already, this year has made it pretty hard to miss all the signs climate change is affecting this economy. Hurricanes, wildfires, plenty of extreme heat have all been disrupting supply chains and getting in the way of people and companies getting down to the business of doing business. And it's starting to show up in our individual lives, too, and in some cases, even in our wardrobes, as Marketplace's Kimberly Adams explains.
I have this pair of light-colored blue jeans, and they are in bad shape. Have been for a while. I should replace them, but I haven't, because I didn't really wear jeans much this summer. And as Levi Strauss CEO Chip Berg told CNBC, I wasn't the only one.
It's hard to sell a pair of Levi's blue jean bottoms when it's 110 degrees outside. And I think that did kind of contribute to the softness that we saw in wholesale.
As the planet gets hotter, we'll likely hear more companies blaming climate change, not just for supply chain disruptions, but also for changing consumer needs, says Ken Pucker at Tufts University's Fletcher School.
The fashion industry is one that has long lead times. And so if, in fact, there is a major shift that's weather-related or trend-related, brands end up selling less and getting caught with lots of inventory.
Major shifts in weather are going to become more common, and it's not just our clothes we'll need to adjust. The Department of the Treasury recently released a report on how climate change will hit individual households, for example, with higher utility bills and food prices. Susanna Fritzberg is a Deputy Assistant Secretary at Treasury.
And there are even ways that might be a little bit more unexpected, like disruptions in access to childcare that might mean a household has to scramble to find a new provider, maybe spend more, or even forego earned income.
Treasury is warning families to get ready, especially those in areas with the greatest risk of severe weather and those with limited financial safety nets. I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Coming in here with zero ego. I'm just going to ask all the dumb questions.
And we will answer them. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 288 today, almost 0.9%, 33,407. The NASDAQ grew 211 points. That is 1.6% on that index. Ended things at 13,431. The S&P 500 picked up 50 points, 1.2%, 43.8. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow gave back 0.3%. The NASDAQ was up 1.6%. S&P 500 increased about 0.5%. MGM Resorts rolled up 4.8% today. The casino operator gave an update on the cyber attack it suffered last month, saying it would cost the company about $100 million. It said the effect should be minimal, though, after the third quarter of this year. Tesla picked up 0.2% today after reducing prices again on its Model 3. Electric truck maker Rivian added 3.5%. ChargePoint, which owns and operates a network of EV charging stations, powered up 3.6%. Bonds down, yield on the 10-year T-note up 4.78%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Mitchell was telling us about weakening demand for oil globally. Turns out the movement of all kinds of stuff is slowing down. The World Trade Organization has cut its forecast for global trade growth this year in half. Back in April, WTO said international trade would grow 1.7% in 2023. Now it's walking that back to more like 0.8%. Savannah Marr is on that one.
Back in the spring, the WTO was betting that a couple of drags on global trade would let up. First, inflation, says Jacob Kierkegaard with the Peterson Institute.
I think they were very clearly expecting inflation to come down faster than it has.
That didn't go as planned. Rising interest rates meant to tame inflation, put a dent in U.S. consumer spending, and even more of one in Asia and Europe.
There are some economies that are teetering at the edge of recession, countries like Germany, for instance.
That's Ishwar Prasad, a professor of trade policy at Cornell. Plus, he says the war in Ukraine isn't letting up.
There is some doom and a fair bit of gloom in the air.
Meanwhile, the world's largest exporter is in the middle of a real estate crisis.
I mean, China is just massive. So when they sneeze, you know, the rest of the world can get a cold, right?
Christine McDaniel at the Mercatus Center says the strained property market in China is hampering that country's much-anticipated pandemic recovery. All that means fewer goods moving between countries, which Jacob Kierkegaard with the Peterson Institute says is generally not a positive indicator.
Trade makes you richer, and it tends also to make you more productive.
But the WTO still has some optimism left. It stands by its forecast that global trade will rebound in 2024 with 3.3% growth. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
As you might have picked up on listening to this program or just generally following the economic news the past couple of years, this is a confusing moment. Even economists are having a hard time trying to figure out what's going on. And the rest of us are left with questions, which brings me to a conversation I had the other day with producer Maria Hollenhorst.
A few weeks ago, this was earlier this summer, I was at a bar celebrating a friend's birthday.
Okay.
Shout out to Alec. Happy 29th.
Okay.
And as one does when they're at a bar with their friends, people started talking about the economy.
You have great friends.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. But people were sort of just like, you know, oh my gosh, gas prices are so expensive. Everything is up so much. Like, my whole life is so unaffordable. It was just sort of like normal bar time conversation. But then somebody brought up a really, really good question that made me realize that I had to get you into the studio to talk about this topic.
Okay.
My name is Taylor Mott, and I am a film editor here in Los Angeles.
My name is Milan Cook, and I am a production assistant here in Los Angeles.
So Taylor and Milan were two of the people that I was talking to that night, and I recently forced them to get on a Zoom with me to sort of recap the conversation that we had that night.
I'm excited to see where this conversation goes because I do have genuine questions about what's going on.
Yeah. And for me, I feel like, Maria, our conversation at the bar was so interesting. And I'm here coming in here with zero ego. I'm just going to ask all the dumb questions.
Amen.
So first of all, their questions were not dumb. Okay. They were very good.
Okay.
Here's the big one.
Okay.
Inflation is slowing down, but when will prices go back down? I think that was the question.
You know, we know that the answer to that question, when will prices go back down, might be kind of unsatisfying.
No, it totally is. How much time do I have?
Let's give you a minute.
Okay.
Minute 30.
So here's the deal. In part, you can blame Jay Powell, because early on in the inflationary cycle we're in now, Powell and others at the Fed said this is going to be transitory. But the problem was that Powell's understanding of the word transitory was not regular people's understanding of the word transitory, right? Regular people heard transitory and they said, oh, prices are going to go up and they're going to come back down.
Mm-hmm.
What Powell meant was that the rate of inflation was going to be transitory, right? The rate of inflation is the rate at which prices rise. I know I'm speaking really fast, but I've only got a minute and a half, and I know it's my show. But so prices are going to remain elevated for some period of time, maybe forever in certain goods, because that's the way the economy works. Some prices are sticky and they just stay stuck. Rent is a really good example. Gas is more volatile. It's on the other end. But transitory did not mean prices are going to come down. That was less than a minute.
Right. And for people who do not know who Jay Powell is
new to the program,
well,
are they?
People who do not think about transitory in their everyday life, do not think about interest rates in their everyday life, but do experience these high prices, I think something that is generally misunderstood is the idea that prices going up is just generally the way that things are supposed to go. And that if prices are falling, that's actually kind of like a bad sign.
So let's take that apart a little bit, right? Prices rise over time because that's a sign of and a symptom of economic growth. That's the way it goes. That the Federal Reserve and many other central banks, this started in New Zealand, but that's a whole different podcast. 2% is the number that the Fed wants things to be at. The catch is that if prices go down precipitously all across the board, right, that actually causes problems of its own. So if I'm in the market for a television set and we're in a deflationary period and a television set costs me $500, but I know prices are going down across the board. We're having deflation. If I just wait a month, that TV is going to be $400. And if I wait 2 months, that TV is going to be $300. The problem, of course, is that in the American economy, spending by or on behalf of consumers drives 70% of everything that happens in this economy. So if consumers say, I'm just going to wait, then bad things happen because consumers aren't driving the economy. It is, in a very wonky econ-friendly phrase, it's called the paradox of thrift. We want people to save because that's good, but if we save too much, that is macroeconomically bad.
Yes, exactly. That was like one of the things that we talked about in the bar that
day. You need to go to different bars.
Had a lovely time. Was that, you know, that television set, if you're holding back on buying it, then maybe right. The company that makes the television set is like, well, maybe we should hire less people. Maybe we should then not build the new factory we were thinking about building. And so it sort of like throws sand in the gears of like the whole system and bad things happen.
I think you ought to host this program.
Well, hang on.
Let me just say, you're an exceptional radio producer. I'm an okay radio host. Let's stay with our jobs. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So I talked about that 2% inflation thing right. at the bar that night.
Oh, all right. Wow.
Taylor and Milan, they had more questions. They're okay. very smart people, so they asked follow-ups, and we got to that. And okay. then Milan brought up this.
In that conversation, you sort of talked about this 2% in every year. And something that we circled back to was, is that the case forever? And, like, what happens at the end of forever? Like, it got me a little existential, because that can't – is that sustainable?
Wow. Okay. So that brings to mind two things. The first thing it brings to mind is a conversation I had with my daughter when she was like 4 or 5, and she was being super pokey. And I was like, come on, we got to go before the sun explodes, will you? And she looked at me and she said, Dad, the sun's going to explode? And for like the next year and a half, I was like, it's okay. It's going to be in 5 billion years. It's okay. We won't be around. Anyway, so.
Poor child.
So that, well, yeah, she's fine. She turned out fine. But so that brings me to the second part, right? It's not like the economy is eventually going to explode, but growing forever is not sustainable. And you're seeing that now as people get more savvy about climate change yeah. and global warming and sustainability, right? So eventually we're going to come to our economic senses and we're going to pull back a little bit. But for now, growth is the way things are and the way they are going to be and until a while from now.
So, I don't know. That's the answer, I guess.
Thanks for coming to the studio with that cheery ending.
Yeah, I promised them I would ask you that question. So, hopefully they're listening.
Well, if not, then we got a whole different conversation we have to have. All right, so look, if you and your friends or your bar buddies or whoever have questions about this economy, write to us. We'll figure it out. Marketplace.org is where you can get started doing that. This final note on the way out today, which will take the form of the internet meme Shot Chaser. The CEO of Crocs, the footwear company, told CNN today that business is great because people just want to be comfortable in what they wear now post-pandemic down to their shoes. Casualization, he calls it. Here is the chaser, though. This week, the company unveiled a Crocs cowboy boot. I am not making this up. $120 available October 23rd, spurs and all. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context. Two, actually, they are of a pair. Number one, UAW President Sean Fain said today that General Motors has agreed to put workers who are making batteries for the company's EVs under the union's master contract. That has been a big sticking point. And related, the White House announced that starting in January, EV buyers can get the tax credits outlined in the Inflation Reduction Act straight off the sticker when they actually buy the car instead of having to wait until they file their taxes. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you on Monday, all right? This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.